AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Matt McNeil. Last year, I had the privilege of interviewing Kurt Brown. He spent more than 30 years as a reporter in Minnesota newspapers, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the state of Minnesota. He writes the popular history column every Sunday for the Minneapolis Star Tribune as well. Noted author as well. And he wrote a book last year, Minnesota 1918, when flu, fire, and war ravaged the state. We talked to him about that. It was a fairly unique book. But now, because of what's happening today, we actually want to revisit this book with Kurt and talk a little bit more about the flu aspect of what happened in 1918. Kurt Brown is kind enough to join us. Hi, Kurt.
Good to talk to you, Matt.
Good to talk to you as well. The you mentioned to me before we went on the air here that you are getting more interest. You did something with the Minnesota Historical Society. How many people showed up for your online discussion?
Yeah, it was my first foray into a Facebook Live book talk. I'd rather have been in like the History Center auditorium or a cozy little bookstore, but 400 people, nearly 400 people tuned in, which kind of blew me away. It's either a point that I think, like my daughter mentions, some people don't want to know anything about 1918, don't even want to think about it, but other people are really interested in looking back at history and seeing what we can learn and how maybe we should have seen this coming a little more than our leaders who were caught flat-footed.
Well, and I want to make sure we don't, I don't want to negate a good portion of this book. Once again, this book, it talks about World War I in 1918. And then as well, another really unique element of Minnesota history, in mid-October, fires ranged across the state. We had a lot of communities and people die because of fires. I mean, 1918 was a really rough year in Minnesota.
Well, and that's one thing we could take away today. You know, you think about how bad what we're dealing with now is and how it's devastating the economy and these mind-numbing statistics that we grapple with every day on the number of cases and the number of deaths in the state and in the country. But when you compare it to 102 years ago, things were, believe it or not, much worse in 1918. In 1918, the Spanish flu, which we should talk about because that's really not the accurate name for it, but the deadly flu pandemic of 1918, this deadly strain, killed probably, they're not sure, but about 50 million people across the world and 675,000 in the United States. So if you look at the size of the population of the country 102 years ago, it was one-third roughly of what it is now. So that would be the equivalent of 2 million deaths, more than 2 million deaths in the United States, when it looks like this kind of horrible pandemic will wipe out maybe 100,000 or 200,000 lives. You know, that's one-tenth the death toll of 1918. So it is worth remembering that we've been through worse than we are experiencing today.
You talk about the term, they called it the Spanish flu. I mean, and truly, correct me if I'm wrong, this started at Leavenworth, Kansas, correct?
Well, experts aren't sure, but most do agree that it was somehow this strain of the flu in 1918 was transferred from a pig or a hog on a farm in Kansas to a young soldier. Of course, World War One, you mentioned, was going on, and it was that movement of troops, the transfer of troops around the country to train and then head off to Europe, that really spread the 1918 flu pandemic. So it was really a trifecta of woe. You had war going on in the trenches and mustard gas of Europe. You had this deadly flu strain, and then in northeastern Minnesota, you had the deadliest forest fires and natural disaster in state history, with 450 people dying in the fire. If you were lucky enough to survive the fire, you were crammed into evacuee housing, where, of course, the chances of getting the flu went way up, and more than 100 documented cases of fire survivors catching and dying of the flu are part of the sad history of 1918.
When you talk about 675,000 people in the United States died in 1918 because of flu, what was the timeline of that? Was all that pretty much all confined to 1918, or was that over the next few years?
Well, there were some cases that lingered on into 1919, but it really came in three waves, the 1918 flu pandemic. There was a spring wave, and this is a little scary, which looking back wasn't as bad as the deadly spikes came in the fall. And when you look at how different cities reacted, Philadelphia, for example, threw a big patriotic World War One morale-boosting parade with hundreds and thousands of people showing up. Well, they had a huge spike not surprisingly, right after that big public gathering.
Sounded like after Mardi Gras down in New Orleans this time around.
Exactly. And a city like St. Louis, which came early with social distancing rules and shutting down public gatherings and closing schools, had a much lower spike in deaths. Then they relaxed some of those rules, and then there was a little uptick in the death count in St. Louis. So the social distancing stuff works. And we should point out that Minneapolis was pretty early on in closing schools and movie theaters and schools and public gatherings. And just recently, the National Geographic posted a analysis from 1918 statistics, and they looked at death tolls 6 months after the flu really started peaking. And of 36 cities, Minneapolis had the lowest death rate 6 months out. So the stuff does work. You know, we're all itching to get back to normal life, but we have to be careful because there are risks associated, of course, with how quick we try to jump back into normalcy.
When you talk about, I mean, one of the things we can talk about coronavirus today is, I mean, we said it on the radio show, you know, when you saw it in January going and then you see the flights going everywhere, it's like, okay, everyone's going to have this. You know, you can't stop it. I mean, it was very different back then. When you talk about Minnesota specifically, I mean, obviously with Leavenworth and then the getting going overseas, being part of the military, is that how it spread throughout the state of Minnesota, or was it a case where, you know, individual would come in and all of a sudden Fergus Falls would have an outbreak and then Alexandria would have an outbreak and then all of a sudden it was in the cities? How exactly do you know how it spread through Minnesota?
Yeah, well, we're not exactly sure, but you would think that small towns that didn't have the kind of travel that the cities had would have had less impact. But if you look down in Martin County, the Fairmont area in southwestern Minnesota, they were hit hard with the flu, and they're being hit hard again with COVID-19. So they call these epidemics and pandemics for a reason. They do have a way of spreading, really getting into the society. And, you know, we did mention the misnomer that is the Spanish flu. And we should point out that back in 1918, because the war was going on, both the United States and England had laws on the book that said the media, the newspapers, were kind of being censured to make sure they didn't hurt the war morale and the patriotic fever in those countries. So when you do the research from 1918, you find all kind of health commissioners saying, well, the flu, you know, we'll have it under control. It's no big deal. Meanwhile, Spain was not directly involved in World War I. So when hundreds and then thousands of Spaniards started to die, and the newspapers covered it extensively, it quickly became known as the Spanish flu. But as you mentioned it, the Kansas flu is probably a more accurate term.
Clearly, from what I mean, as you described it, the one of the things that's interesting as well, remember when we talked about your book, and we talked really about World War I, I think, was and the feelings towards the Germans and the Allies during that time, and that it was almost town per town, that there was, you know, there was a lot of German immigrants that, you know, didn't nearly feel as if this, you know, United States should be involved in this, stuff like that. I mean, it was a really kind of situation where, depending on where you were at, the interpretation of what was going on overseas was very different. Was the same thing? I mean, you mentioned some of the larger cities here, but did you have a case where there really was a state, like Governor Walz, I think, has done a fairly decent job here in Minnesota at, you know, putting down some statewide rules. Was there anything like that, or was it pretty much the counties and the individual cities were to themselves on what they did?
Yeah, I think today you're seeing governors across the country kind of stepping up and taking a more leadership role. I think it was a more decentralized approach in 1918, where it was local health commissioners and counties, kind of the small municipalities coming at it. But the immigration stuff you point out, there's so many similarities between 1918 and 2020. And one of them, sadly, is the kind of anti-immigrant sentiment that is sweeping a lot of this country. Of course, in 1918, we were talking about Germans. They were the enemy. And there was a case in Minnesota of a German-American Minnesotan who was tar and feathered and brought to the South Dakota border and told he'd be shot if he ever came back. So, you know, not only did we have anti-immigrant sentiment in 1918, we had forest fires burning out of control like we see in Australia and the Western U.S. today. We have soldiers fighting in far-off hot spots. So, you know, you think 102 years, wow, that's a long time ago. You know, I mean, cars were barely a thing. Radio was barely a thing. But medicine hasn't come too far that we've been able to control these viruses, and firefighting hasn't come too far. We don't know how to stop these wildfires that are ravaging the world. So in some ways, 102 years really isn't too much of a time span.
I was reading the excellent article that was in the New York Times this week about authors who had described the plague outbreak in Italy in the 1600s. And the fact is that what they're describing is exactly what we are hearing from other parts of the country, where people are saying, get back to work. We're throwing a party. This is no big deal. And of course, the plague, you know, wiped out good chunks of this population. We, you know, we kind of learned some of the things, as you describe, in 1918. Although, I mean, still medicine at that point was, I was reading, what was it, the World's Fair, and was it 1880 with Garfield, and he went there and visited it, and he said they were just describing, hey, if you clean everything in the operating room, they don't die nearly as much. I mean, it wasn't exactly like we were, you know, sprinting ahead with medicine by 1918. We just figured out to wash our hands to stop the spread of diseases only 30 years earlier. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I think, though, that there were lessons that we did learn in 1918 that in 2020, we just once again just seem destined to forget.
Well, and I also decided kind of towards the end of my book, I should be a little bit forward looking. So I asked the question, could this happen again? And I quoted a couple experts. One, a guy named John Barry, who's the author of kind of the definitive book on the 1918 flu. It's called The Great Influenza. And he said every expert on influenza agrees another pandemic not only can happen, it almost certainly will happen. And then I went on to quote a science writer by the name of Robin Marantz Hennig, who said, we like to believe that such plunder is an ancient relic, that whatever was killing people so ruthlessly in 1918 must be something we can treat by now. But in the face of a virus that kills so rapidly, all the antiviral drugs in the physician's armamentarium would be impotent. If a strain similar to 1918 variant were to emerge today, some experts believe that even modern medicine would be helpless to prevent many related cases. So the point I want to make is that if it was easy enough for me a few years ago to find experts, you know, with quotes like that, certainly our leaders and our public health officials and our politicians shouldn't have been caught as flat-footed as we've been. Still we don't know how to test, and we need more tests, and the data is kind of shaky. So it's kind of staggering how ill-prepared we were for this pandemic.
Absolutely. That's an understatement for sure. One final thing I want to ask you, Kurt, about this is that let's talk about how they finally did get this stopped. I mean, and obviously that's not a perfect way to say it, because, I mean, it did, as you said, linger into the 1919, and there were probably outbreaks in certain towns and stuff. But was there something that just happened that basically said, okay, if we don't lock this country down that in 1918, that this is going to get worse and it's going to stay with us for a while? Or was there something else that happened that basically enough was being done to where this influenza outbreak subsided?
Yeah, no one's really sure. You know, there was no magic bullet. There was no vaccine that came about, although the Mayo Clinic thought they had one and tried, but it ended up to be proven worthless. It really just, the 1918 flu just kind of ran its course through the society and through the world population and just kind of petered out, coincidentally, right as World War I was ending. Of course, the armistice was signed on November 11th of 1918, and that was when we started really just seeing the numbers drop, and it just kind of had plowed its way through the public and began to fade away. I mean, I'm sure some of this social distancing and the closing of schools, movie theaters, and churches certainly helped stop the spread, and the end of the war certainly helped without all these soldiers being transferred around and spreading the contagion, but it really just kind of played itself out, so... Hopefully that can happen here, but with science 102 years later, you would think a vaccine would be coming sometime next year.
You still have your delightful history column over at the Star Tribune on the weekends, correct?
Yeah. In fact, I think we're at 291 Sundays in a row, and it's become a kind of a crowdsourcing thing. We started in 2014, and we just almost as an afterthought put a little note there that said, if you have any ideas or suggestions, email mnhistory@startribune.com, which magically files into my Gmail account. Mm-hmm. Anyway, people have shared with me their family stories, letters from 1918. I'm working on one now, but letters that someone during the COVID crisis has gone through the old family letters and found a bunch of letters from World War One, her grandparents from World War One, writing to each other about the flu and the war. So I keep learning more and more stuff. And yep, every Sunday on page B4 in the Star Tribune, because history happened before. I don't know if that's why it's on there, but I like to point that out.
You also have a current book project you're working on right now?
I do. There's a fellow named Lee Radzik, who for 36 years was the site manager up at the iconic Split Rock Lighthouse up on the North Shore. Well, he retired last year, and folks at the Historical Society thought it would be a good memoir for him to write about his 36 years raising a family up on that clifftop that so many people visit. So I'm kind of helping him with that, and that's due in July. I think we'll probably be out next year. A good look at life at Split Rock Lighthouse from a guy, an insider's look. So that's a fun project to get me through the pandemic.
That's going to be a fun book, just because when he started there, it's a very different lighthouse than it was now. And as a guy that goes up there, and I've taken the kids up there, spectacular view. But I mean, it's definitely, I imagine, oh God, I can't wait for that book. I'll leave it for that. We'll have you back to talk about that book when it comes out, okay?
I look forward to it, Matt.
All righty. And reminder, get this book. I said this last time when we talked to Kurt. I cannot recommend this book enough. Just if you're a fan of history, 1918 in Minnesota was an incredible year for history, in the sense being that so many things are happening that we're still seeing the impacts today, and we can still learn from that time, as you've heard from Kurt today. Minnesota, 1918, when flu, fire, and war ravaged the state. Kurt Brown. Kurt, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
I always enjoy it, Matt. Thanks.
Thank you. Matt McNeil right here. It's AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.